All right, everybody, welcome back to Out of Our League. Thank the Lord, the Astros did not win the World Series. I hope that that organization is miserable.
All is right in the world.
All is right in the world. Derrick Henry is out for the Titans. Will they survive without him? And we're also going to talk the worst kind of people to be around at parties. All right, let's get after it. All right, my quote for the day comes to us from Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Simple, effective. God, I love that guy.
He's awesome. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Out of Our League with Benny and Ben, presented by Backseat Coach. Quick World Series recap. Feel good for Atlanta. Feel even better that Houston didn't win it.
No, it is. It's all the Astros just destroy the AL teams, just like the Yankees and Red Sox. They just continue to just to beat down on. But you know what? I love that the NL steps up every year and takes care of them in the World Series. So shout out Braves, shout out Nationals before, bringing peace to the world. I appreciate them. And yeah, good for the Braves too, just because not a ton of luck for Atlanta sports. And I think they kind of needed this one.
Yeah, that was awesome. I think it was 20. It's been 25 years since they've won their last one. And Freddie Freeman hit a nice home run. And he's been with that organization since, I think I saw 2007. So it's nice to see him win one. But I don't think I could be happy for the Astros until every single player that was on that team is out of the league.
Yeah, they have to not have Altuve, Carrera, and then you know what's funny? I like Dusty Baker though. I just love like the old school baseball guy. That's one of my favorite characters in sports. But I they need it. Once I get rid of all those names that just committed heinous crimes against a sport, then I'll start maybe cheering for them, but probably not still. Probably still won't.
As you shouldn't. I, you know, good for the Astros. Or not good for the Astros.
Definitely not. Gosh.
Good for the Braves. Bad for the Astros. All is right in the world. All is currently right in the world.
Absolutely. 28-3 though, still kind of a mark in Atlanta sports. But that's okay. But today's their day.
Thank you for mentioning that. I'm glad that you could bring that up.
It was needed.
All about yourself. In other news, the College Football Playoff Committee is on some sort of drug. I am not sure which one. But some sort of drug, because I don't know if everybody saw the playoff ranking that came out, but what are they doing? For people who haven't seen, Georgia's number one, obviously. Okay. Now things start to get dicey. Alabama's number two. Okay. Alabama is a great team. Don't get me wrong. They should probably deserve to be in the college football playoff, but they lost to an unranked Texas A&M. Okay. We all remember that they lost. Just going to put that out there. Number three, Michigan State at 8-0. I don't love this one, but I understand it, right? They're 8-0. They're in a Power 5 conference, and they just had a big win over Michigan. It's three might be a little bit too high, but whatever. Number four, Oregon. Stop. That is where I'm drawing the line. How on God's green earth do you have Oregon at number four, who lost to an unranked Stanford? The Pac-12 is not a good conference. Okay. They aren't. And
they beat Ohio State. Did you forget?
I don't care if they beat Ohio State. Them losing to Stanford. So, okay. They beat Ohio State, right? So Ohio State has a quality loss to what people believe is a good Oregon team. So why is Ohio State not higher? Because Oregon lost to Stanford, but Ohio State only lost to Oregon. You know what I mean? Like, we could transitive property the heck out of this, but doesn't make any sense to me.
I love it because the college football selection committee is doing their job, which is just to make two idiots like us just argue back and forth and wonder why the arbitrary numbering of these teams is the way it is, which is just, I feel, you know, who I always feel bad for when looking at this is just Cincinnati, because there is just no hope for here on out. If you have Oregon at the four spot and then you're sandwiched with two Big Ten teams and then two SEC teams, I don't know how they're going to end up getting in unless there's a couple three loss teams at the top.
I mean, if they don't let Cincinnati in this year, no non-Power 5 school will ever make it in. right? Because they have 3 1-loss teams. Cincinnati is currently ranked 6th. They have Ohio State, Oregon, and Alabama ranked above that. Now, I think they're better than Oregon, flat out. I think they're better than Oregon. Which, could you make an argument for Ohio State, Michigan State, Alabama, and Georgia being better than them? You could. You very well could. But they haven't lost a game. And they have a quality win against Notre Dame, right? Who is currently what? 10th, right? So you have a quality 10-point win against a 10th-ranked opponent. It's
almost like they need to play. It's almost like all their non-conference games have to be top 25 teams. I think that's just what it's unbelievable, because you just keep moving the goalposts, right? Where it's just, you know, all right, schedule people good. All right, well, we have Notre Dame and we beat them, and we're going to probably go undefeated, and then still you're not going to be able to get in. So I think this kind of goes back to one of our earlier pods, where make it like a Sweet 16 or something, or 12 or whatever you need to do, because this is, it's always just going to be Big Ten, SEC, or the occasional ACC mixed in with maybe a Pac-12.
At this point, you kind of have to. Like, this year, okay, I'll say this, and this is for the whole world to hear. Oregon is going to lose another game, okay? They're not going to be into the college football playoff. They're going to lose another game. And if they get let into the college football playoff, I will put my mortgage on the number one team, which is looking like Georgia, on Georgia to cover whatever spread it is. My 42 points, take it. I'll take it. Oregon should not be a top four team in the league right now, or in the college football right now.
Yeah, and then you got Oklahoma too, which is just kind of sneakily hanging around, just waiting for more teams to lose, and then I gradually move up there, even though they're not, I don't know if they're really that good.
Thank you for working me up even more. Why is Oklahoma 9th? Or 8th, sorry. They should be ahead of Michigan. Like, they are in, again, I don't think that the Big 12 is necessarily a great conference, but ever since Caleb Williams took over, they haven't really had a close game. They're currently 9-0, which is the best record anybody has. One more win than Georgia and one more win than Cincinnati. So I don't know why they are behind Oregon. Oregon should be like 10th right now.
I feel like every year there's some funky, there's always 1 or 2 weeks that have really insane rankings that rile everybody up to. And this is definitely one of the weeks. I think Michigan State beating Michigan, I think messed a lot of this up too. Cause I feel like if you saw Michigan in, like, you know, rightfully Michigan State kind of deserves that spot being undefeated. But I feel like if you saw Michigan in the mix, just as a passive college football fan, I would just think that would make a lot more sense. But once you throw the green in there with Michigan State, now I'm all flustered, and now I don't know what to do. I see unfamiliar teams in the top four, and I get a little scared.
They won't win out.
They'll probably lose to Ohio State, I imagine.
I would imagine they would lose to Ohio State, and I think they have a tough gauntlet too. Let me check here. But yeah, I understand. Like, at this point in time, I understand why they are ranked where they are. Actually, they don't have that tough of a gauntlet. They play Purdue, Maryland, at Ohio State, and then Penn State. So, I mean, I doubt they'll beat both Ohio State and Penn State. They'll lose one of those games, if not both. But I understand why they're number three. Like, I can understand that ranking. But
it's 4 through 6 that's giving you a hard time.
Yeah, I'm going to go crazy if – all right, here's the 5 teams that I can see that will and should make it. Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Cincinnati. It's got to be one combination of those 5. If Michigan State wins out, sub them in for Ohio State, but I don't think they will. So I'm not even going to put their name out there. Those 5 teams should be the pull of 4. That goes into the playoff.
Yeah, that feels right to me. But you know, there's going to be some more insane losses, and we're going to be presented with a scenario. I just feel it coming that there's going to be a team with 2 losses that's staring in the face of Cincinnati, and it's going to be just a square off to see who's going to get let in. I mean, regardless, the way Georgia's rolling right now, especially if they win the SEC championship. I don't covet anyone in that 4 spot, but it's still the principle. If you like, what's Cincinnati supposed to do? They're beating everybody in their schedule. They're playing everybody each week. So they, I don't know. It's upsetting to see them that far low.
Yeah, that is, It's tough. I can't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, we got to move with the NFL. This is getting sad. We got to move it on. We talked about cheaters and then this list manipulation. We got to move on. We got to get to the NFL.
This is terrible. All right. So two big things. I'd like to just say that the Bengals lost to the Jets. The Jets might be the best team in the AFC. I don't know what is in the Jets' DNA where they just lose so bad. Maybe the Bengals and the Titans, who are two of the good best teams in the AFC. I don't know what's going on in New York, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
And no Zach Wilson. So, you know, begs a question.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to be asking.
We'll see what – oh, they're playing tonight, actually. But we'll see what is it, Mike White does tonight?
Mike White. Yeah, but it isn't saying, like you said. It's weird. The Jets are one of those teams that really, like, plays to their competition in a kind of – and you know, they'll lose games – they'll lose games to teams that are kind of their equivalent or slightly better, but then any team that's significantly better, they somehow end up beating them, which is just, I mean, two quality wins. You know, they would be, they might be in the top 25 of the college football poll right now, but
number three.
Yeah. But I know they're probably the best team in the AFC East for sure at this point.
Yeah. All right. That's enough Jets talk. Benny, I have an honest question for you, though. Do you think that the Titans can make a run without Derrick Henry?
Well, they got Adrian Peterson. So if it's 2010, my answer is yes.
Yeah.
If it's 2021, I don't know. He's such a force, dude. I feel like we've actually talked about him a ton on this podcast. It was like our first interview topic, too. But he's It's gonna be very difficult. I'm not sure what their playoff chances were this year. Anyways, like you said, I mean, we did talk about them losing to the Jets earlier on, and they're in kind of a very disgustingly bad division as well. But I don't know. This kind of cements my thought process that they're not going to go too far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they could. They'll probably still win their division, but yep. He is the only running back in the NFL that makes his team go.
Yeah,
like you can, you know, the Vikings can survive without Dalvin Cook. The Panthers can win games without Christian McCaffrey. And I do think that the Titans can win games without Derrick Henry. But having him in the game makes you stack the box so much. And if you don't stack the box so much, you're done for. So I kind of agree with that. I see them maybe winning their division. We'll see. But they won't go far in the playoffs without him.
Yeah, Derrick Henry really disproves the whole running backs are expendable type of notion that's out there. It's like they have a very short shelf life, but Derrick Henry is one of those difference makers that you can really rely and revolve your whole offense around. Kind of like an old school running back that that you know teams used to be built around. So it's such a blow too. And there's a lot of like there was that too, like Calvin Ridley for the Falcons too, like being you know out indefinitely too, and then. There was a couple of tough ones this Sunday that kind of deterred any chances that some teams had.
Yeah, another one, Saints without Jameis. He tore his ACL. Yes. Sorry, Jameis. That stinks.
Apologies.
But they signed Marcus Mariota, or they traded for Marcus Mariota off of the Raiders. So my thought process is they're going to go with some sort of Marcus Mariota, Taysom Hill tandem. But again, I don't know. Like, they're not going to win their division. They beat the Bucs, which, hate to say it, but I called it. I can see the graphic now. Bucs versus Packers. Saints beat them both. All right. Submit it in your mind. But I don't see a Taysom Hill-led offense or a Marcus Mariota-led offense, for that matter, taking them to the playoffs.
It sucks too because that was a game where I think with Winston too they still would have won that game. It just would have been like it would have made people think of the Saints differently, especially with Jameis being healthy at the end of it. But it sucked too because they played so well. But I'm right there with you. The Bucs still have the division, and we're absolutely going to see that graphic come late January. But I know that was there's a lot of interest, like Bucs losing and then the Chargers losing too. There were some interesting losses. The Bengals, we talked about that earlier too, but there were some interesting losses where it was just like one of those classic things you're going to look back on, which probably won't mean too much. Like these teams will still be pretty solid come playoff time, but definitely something to keep in the back of our heads.
Pats are back, baby.
Pats are back. That was my transition. I just wanted to talk about the Patriots.
Four and three now, right?
I think they're 4-4, but we, We got the Panthers this week, and I think we're on an up. I think we kind of found something. We're a classic team that we should be like 6-2. But granted, you can do that with every team. But still, they defense. I love the defense. Judon is such a beast. I love that guy. And then it's just played just a really solid game. I honestly chalked it up as a loss in my head, like going through the schedule, thinking which teams like we were going to beat. But that was I kind of said this in the last podcast. That game was going to determine how I was going to feel for the rest of the year, and I feel very positive now.
Yeah, I that's a big win for them. I think getting a win like that for Mac Jones is huge because he's already looked pretty comfortable, right? Almost taking down Brady, and he just looks like he's adjusting to the NFL really well. So I think this could go a long way for the confidence of their offense. Their defense is always, you know, up there, pretty good defense, if not, you know, an elite defense. But this will go a long way for their offense. I think this will give them confidence moving forward.
Yeah, 100%. There's been games this year where they've come so close offensively, and there's been some sort of mistake or some error, whether it was a pick or a fumble. And this is definitely one of those games where they finally got over the hump, actually secured the win, and hopefully we'll. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know if that's a hot take if you're a 500 team right now, but I think I definitely see them hopping in at like 5 or 6 spot.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I mean, they being the Chargers is good. You know, they will have to probably split one with the Bills. I don't know how tough their schedule is. Do you know how tough a schedule they have remaining?
Coming up, well, I know they got the they have the Bills. I know the end of the season, it's Bills game between them, the Bills again. So it's going to be an interesting, especially if the Pats kind of use this as momentum and turn into a pretty good team come December. That's going to be an interesting 3 weeks to see how that unfolds. But I think they got the Panthers this week. They got the Browns coming up, and they have to have the Dolphins come up soon too. So it's not looking at those teams, the way they started the year versus what they're looking like now, it's not as difficult, I think, as we might have originally thought. But hey, I'm happy today. I'm smiling from ear to ear.
Pats are back, baby.
Pats are back. But also, I realize this is helping us because if both our teams miss the playoffs, we have to do the Waffle House challenge, which I realized we said in an earlier podcast. So
yeah, please, for the love of God, the Pats need to make the playoffs because the Vikings just lost Cooper Rush on Sunday night. I don't want to talk about it, but I will. It's just such bad coaching. Like, what are you doing? You should blow the Cowboys out, right? You should blow them out with a backup quarterback. And when you have Justin Jefferson, you have Adam Thielen, you have Dalvin Cook, you have a better young offensive line, and you have what's supposed to be a good defense, right? You should blow them out. It's infuriating to see, like, everybody and their mother who's a Vikings fan is like, you're calling too conservative of a game. You're playing not to lose. You're not playing to win, right? Which, that's a big sports guy quote. But there's a difference, right? You're playing way too conservatively. And anybody who watches the games can tell you that. But they still go out and they're like, oh, we're going to win this one again, doing the same thing. It's stupid. It's dumb. Don't do it. Fire the coach. I'm done.
No, you're 100% right. There's a huge difference. It's one of the things where it's like when you have a lead, you're just trying to protect it, and then that's how you end up losing the lead. Where it's kind of a paradox. And that's like the Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins, and like that's their MO right there, is to play not to lose, play super conservatively. And I know, man. I honestly, after watching that game, the first person I thought about was you, and it's incredible because that's how you usually feel after Vikings fans, right? Either just think about you instantly, joyfully, or really sad for you. So this was it's a tough week, and I feel like we've honestly probably spent too much time for it because I can see your eyes watering a tiny bit.
I'll say one more thing. I would rather have a quarterback that goes out and just like, oh, it's 2nd and 9. Throw a 50-yard pass. I don't care. Make them respect the 50-yard pass. I would rather have that than the slow death of being 1 for 11 on 3rd down, right? Like, just take a shot. Take 10 shots a game. I don't care if you throw 2 picks. Chuck it down the field because that is showing that you care about the game.
You got to open up a little bit. You can only run on 3rd down so many times. We got to open up the field.
You have the best second-year receiver in Justin Jefferson. Adam Thielen can stretch the field a little bit too. And they have to respect Dalvin Cook in the run game. So I don't know what you're doing throwing 3-yard passes, 2-yard passes. You're handing it off to the fullback on 3rd and 2 when you have Dalvin Cook. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's certainly not for a lack of weapons that all these decisions are being made. But
it's so stupid. I'm done.
All right. We'll turn it around. They'll probably win again, and they'll probably go on like a nice little winning streak and get you optimistic. And then we just got to stay out of Waffle House. That's our goal here. One of our teams has to make the playoffs.
That is our goal. I'm not banking on the Vikings. So,
well, hopefully this uses momentum. Because if it's not the Patriots, then we're going to be there for 24 hours figuring out how to eat all these waffles.
Let's hope. All right. You want to preview some games?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm gonna get all these right this week. I've kind of decided that ahead of time.
Okay. I think we did well last week because we had the Pats, we had the Saints, and I think, I don't know if we took the Packers.
We did Pats, Saints. We definitely both took Packers if you don't believe in the Cardinals.
Oh, gosh. We were... And I definitely took the Vikings. So
yeah, I might have been 4 for 4 actually. Now that I'm looking at it.
Nice.
All right, we're gonna do it again. Let's run it back.
All right, Browns versus Bengals. Browns are at the Bengals. Bengals are -2.5. This is the only one that I'm a little on.
I know if this was last week, I would be before the Jets game. I'd say Bengals and kind of move right on. But now I'm starting to look at this a little differently. But I think I might still say Bengals because I don't really know what's going on with the Browns.
Yeah, the Browns are a little weird with the Odell. So I'm going to take Bengals -2.5 as well. Here's a random thought about this game. Do you think that it's Odell's fault that he's not getting thrown to? Or do you think it's Baker's fault?
It's so easy to blame Odell. Can we blame the offensive coordinator? I don't know. Can we blame Odell's camp? I've never been a big Odell guy, so that might just be my bias there. I'm a little, I don't know, kind of stand. He's like the antithesis for everything I believe about sports. So I'm going to blame Odell because it's kind of easy to hop on his back right now.
You know what? I saw a graphic, and I think people still think of Odell as the guy who made that one-handed catch for the Giants that one time. But his yards, I think since his rookie year or his sophomore year, yards per game that he's played in have consistently decreased year to year. And I think last year he only averaged about 40 to 50 receiving yards per game, which is not a lot for who's supposed to be an elite receiver. And it, you know, it partially might be the Browns that aren't, you know, giving him the ball. But, you know, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson consistently put up close to, you know, 1,000-yard seasons. And they play in a very conservative offense. So I think it's partially on Odell. Got to get open a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a lesson to all. I think that's also a little lesson to all young wide receivers, too, is just to have a really insane catch. Early on in your career, and then you'll just be thought of as an elite wide receiver for the rest of it. You have to have one pretty solid year, but then, you know, just make sure there's one real nice highlight reel and then just do a bunch in pregame and then you kind of be all set. I think it is Odell. It's also just, I'm not a big fan of anyone that throws, you know, their quarterback underneath the bus, just because I feel like playing quarterback is one of the hardest positions, or it's one of the hardest things to do, I think, in all of sports aside from like hitting a baseball. But they're dealing with so many elements, and just having the one nagging wide receiver that's constantly asking for the ball. It's like the kid in flag football who just says he's constantly open all the time too. It's like they're thinking about so many different things to just think about throwing it to one wide receiver the whole time is a little unrealistic.
Yeah. And it's also like, I'm pretty sure Baker's playing with a torn left labrum right now. And
do it all he can.
He's like, just throw me the ball really deep. I don't care about your shoulder. Yeah. Bengals -2.5. I like that.
Yeah. He's like, holding your kids for the rest of your life? I don't care about that. I need the ball now.
Yeah, I need the ball, please. Packers versus Chiefs. Chiefs are -7.5 because Aaron Rodgers isn't playing. I'm taking the Chiefs -7.5 because I think Aaron Rodgers is the life force of that team. I don't think Jordan Love is going to fill in very well. I think the Chiefs -7.5 is going to hit.
Yeah. Yes, I don't want to pick the Chiefs. Part of me is thinking like this might be one of those games that you see, oh no, Aaron Rodgers instantly double digit Chief win. But the way the Chiefs have been playing, I'm also not sold on them particularly covering this one either. Like they could definitely win by a touch. I'm actually gonna take the Packers as sort of like a you know, all the whole team rallies for the 1 week that Aaron Rodgers is out. So I'm actually going to take the Packers on this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think Jordan Love is going to throw up a stinker. Like, I know the Chiefs defense isn't great, but I just think Jordan Love in his first career start is just going to throw a couple interceptions.
Yeah.
Maybe put up 10 points. I just don't think it's going to be good for Jordan Love. And I think it's going to be a great part of Aaron Rodgers' revenge tour. Like, see what you can do without me? Squat. So, I don't know. I'm taking Chiefs -7.5.
Yeah, it's either going to be that or it's going to be a media QB controversy. Like, he'll throw like 3 touchdowns, 400, like 300 yards, and then it's going to be like, do the Packers even need Aaron Rodgers?
Exactly. Yeah, one of two things can happen.
Yeah, there's no in between.
There's no way he plays an average game. All right. Last one is Titans at Rams. Rams are -7.5. Again, probably because Derrick Henry is hurt. I'm gonna preface this by saying Derrick Henry is super important to the Titans, but I do think that Titans are still a serviceable team without him. So I'm gonna take Titans +7.5. I think they will probably lose, but I think they can keep it close.
Yeah, I like that too. I think for what I'm inclined to do Rams on this one, but I also think the 7.5. For whatever reason, I always want to go. I want to go Titans on this one too. I'm not liking the 7.5. I feel like that's too high for me. So I'm gonna go Titans too for a lot of the similar reasons you said as well. And also just the way that last game ended against the Texans, where it seemed like they had it completely in hand, and then let up like 22 points in the fourth quarter. That's probably not something I should put a lot of stock in. But I'm right there with you. The Titans are still a serviceable team. They still got good weapons on offense. So I'm right there with you.
All right, perfect. Lock them in. Lock them in, everybody.
I'm telling you, three winners. So if you want to buy a home, maybe put some money down and then take that mortgage, put it on these three games, because then you'll be sitting pretty.
You'll be sitting very pretty.
All right, we're back with some segments. We got three good ones this week. My favorite's at the end, but we will start with our old reliable fact or fiction. So you got a good one that's close to my heart today. So why don't you start it off here?
All right. This information is slightly outdated. I think it was from the beginning of this year, but it still holds true. So of all the receivers or tight ends or running backs that have caught Tom Brady touchdown passes, Randy Moss ranks 5th all time in the number of touchdown passes caught from Tom Brady. True or false? Fact or fiction?
Fact or fiction? I'm going to say fiction.
It is fiction. But follow up, where do you think he lands?
I feel like I know this. Is he 2?
He's 3. I don't, that surprised me so much. How many years did he play with Brady?
So it's kind of sneaky. The first season they played together, they both set individual records. I think Brady had 50 touchdowns, and that was the record for quarterbacks at the time. I think Moss had 23 touchdowns, which was the record for wide receivers. So the 1 year alone, they had insane connections together, but can I guess? So they played for like 4 years together, 3 or 4 years, because I believe Moss was also in that second Super Bowl too. But let me ask.
I thought he was only in one Super Bowl.
Oh, but maybe.
Continue.
Yeah, but can I try to guess the other two?
Yep.
So one of them has to be Gronk.
He's number one with 102 touchdowns.
That's ridiculous.
Double anybody else.
And then I'm going to say, this is kind of a toss up here. I was going to say, I'm going to say Welker.
Welker's 4th with 38.
Oh, is it Edelman?
Edelman is 2nd with 41. It's so crazy to me that Edelman played with Brady for what? 8 years?
Yep.
Double the amount of time that Moss did and only has one more touchdown catch than him. That's kind of absurd.
I hear it's funny because it was such a compact amount of time, but the amount of, like, Brady loved it was probably, I guess Gronk you would consider, well, Gronk you consider a tight end, even though he's pretty much a receiver with Brady, but Moss is easily the best athlete wide receiver he ever played with. And just that one year together where it was finally just like, because he went so long with having not average wide receivers, but you know, not the cream of the crop. And then it was just like, you just gave him a brand new toy and he just let it rip for like three to four seasons. And it was just a sight to behold. But I know what you mean. It's crazy because like Gronk's played with him forever. Welker played with him for longer. Edelman for years on end played with him. So you just think that Moss wouldn't be that high, but
I'm impressed by you, Benny. That was good. I thought I was going to get you with that one.
You know what? We keep stumbling on each other here. I feel like we're gonna we're always trying to trick each other with these. So my instinct's always to say fiction, and then to think there's like a caveat with it. So my factor fiction is this. I just had it up, and
all right, stall.
We're gonna stall for a tiny bit. It's about Kyrie Irving. About Kyrie Irving, so it's a good one.
Kyrie Irving, he does think the world is flat. True.
All right. Kyrie Irving.
Yep.
If he misses, so what is it? He's ineligible to play. He can't play any games, right?
Correct.
All right. Kyrie Irving will lose $20 million over the course of the season if he plays in zero NBA games?
I'm going to say fiction. I think he'll lose more.
So this, according to my source, which is one website, it is less. It is 16 million. But still, I could be wrong because he has a base salary of 34 and his game checks are 380,000. So it says 16 million.
So he's guaranteed. I don't know how NBA contracts works, but so he must be guaranteed money even if he doesn't play in games.
Yes, I believe that. I believe that's the case. But that's still a lot of.
That is so much money. And I understand that this whole vaccine thing has turned into like a big, you know, freedom of choice, politics, whatever it is. If you tell an average person, I'll give you $16 million, you'll make $16 million just for getting the vaccine? No brainer. That's a no brainer. What?
I would do it for lunch. I would just do it for like a nice sit down lunch, yes, maybe a beer or two, and then I would be like, you know what? I'll get the vaccine. Thank you for buying me this.
Yeah, there was a thing in Minnesota where they were trying to get more people to get the vaccine, and if you got the vaccine, you got $100. And I got it earlier in Massachusetts, so I didn't like have a chance to do that. How great of a deal does that sound? $100 to get the vaccine.
that's perfect. I mean, that's I know that almost makes you regret your decisions to be a great, you know, health professional. You should have just waited, and then you should have just held out. Should have been like a professional athlete, just held out for the money.
For the $100. I don't think I would for the $100, but for the $16 million,
$16 million? They're like,
I might.
They're like, all right, so what you have to do is you could either not get vaccinated and then not get $16 million, or you could play basketball for the Nets. And then we'll also pay money to do that.
You get to play.
But hey, you know what? To each their own. All right, moving on. We will go to our existential questions, which are always a thrill, always getting us thinking. Schultz, I'm going to start with this one. Someone asked me this the other day, just like in general, you know, where does somebody's like positivity and drive in life come from? It kind of goes back to the classic nature nurture question. So where do you think like someone's like positive? You and I both have pretty positive outlooks on life and positive spirit. Is that something that has to be kind of taught by our parents or instilled in us at a young age? Or is that something that we're just kind of instinctively born, genetically wired to be like positive driven people, or, you know, more negative, maybe unmotivated would be the best word there.
Something tells me that it's gotta be intrinsic. And the only reason I say that is, so you see all this stuff about like, you know, two siblings grew up with a dad who, you know, was a drug dealer, or was never there, or was abusive or something, or regardless, whatever it is, not a great situation to live in. And one kid decides to like blame it on that. And then another kid decides to go out and be successful in spite of that. And obviously that's a very simplified example, but you do see examples like that in the world, right? Where there's kids, and you see it on the opposite end of the spectrum. Kids are handed everything and they end up throwing all that away, or they do something meaningful with it. So part of me thinks that it's got to be intrinsic, just because like you see those like really big differences in situations.
It's an excellent point. I was actually more inclined to say it was something that was like taught by at a young age via like a nice stable household, and it was just or even the opposite way too, where if you didn't grow up in a best situation, you might have a more negative outlook on life versus if you were taught good values and all that good stuff, that you'd think more positively about life, and that, you know, and that's always, that opens up a whole different other can of worms. But I can kind of see it being intrinsic, because at the end of the day, your situation comes down to how you perceive it and how you're going to attack it. So if you're in a shitty spot in life, but you have a positive outlook on it, you know, you're going to be more driven to get yourself out of that, as opposed to, you know, the other way, thinking, what was me, and blaming yourself. But that's a good example too. The two, like, you always hear those stories where like one went one way and the other went the other, but
yeah. And I do think it's easier to have a positive outlook on life when you haven't faced as much adversity, right? Yep. Like, so if you're in like a really bad situation and just every day is sort of a struggle, it's definitely a lot harder to maintain that positive outlook.
100%.
Sure. Yeah. Right? Because it's just every day something hitting you. So part of me thinks that like maintaining that positivity is environmental. Like, just if you're hammered with it every day, it's got to be hard. But I think it's got to be partly intrinsic too.
Yeah, I like that. This is a good little, you know, nature versus nurture. It's a classic debate, but this one really got to me. So I was just like, I don't know. It's probably, the answer is always both. Kind of is always both, you know, what situation you grow up in and who you are intrinsically. But good food for thought.
Exactly.
What do you got for me?
All right, this one's a little out there. Do you think that the current way that we live could be some form of heaven?
Wow. Let me ask you this. Is this coming from the same guy that made fun of me for looking up at the moon when I was pretending?
Yes, it is, you moon looker.
I love my life. Wow. Is this like an alternate universe type thing? You just mean like, this is just such a good life that, man, this is
so. I don't think it's necessarily a good life. Okay. That sounded really sad. Obviously it's a good life.
We'll stop recording.
I'm not saying that it's like, you know, paradise, right? But that is kind of what I'm getting at, right? So people think a lot of times that heaven is like you get everything handed to you and like you can have whatever you want and every day is a good day and, you know, you're just in this perfect situation. But my belief is that, you know, what makes the good things so good is the bad things that you experience, right? So if you experience constantly good things, like kind of people's traditional idea of heaven is, it isn't actually as good as like, you know, the ups and downs, the ebbs and flows. So like in everyday life, everybody's experiences ups and downs. They're all relative. But I think that's kind of what makes life beautiful, is the ebbs and flows of life. Whereas like if you would think of a more traditional idea of heaven, I think people would get desensitized to those good things eventually.
That's an excellent point, because you don't appreciate the good times if you don't go through the bad, right? That's kind of like the thing everyone always says too. So it's always, exactly. It's always kind of going, riding that roller coaster in life and feeling all the emotions and going through all the different experiences. That's what living is. And that's, I guess, ultimately what heaven would be. It's just like a combination of all the, of all the life experiences and learning from it. So I see where this is real deep. We're getting real, like,
I know.
Not to quote the news here. We're getting meta we're getting into it.
Exactly. I'm not saying that like I currently think, you know, alternate reality, I'm actually in heaven when I think that I'm living life. I'm saying like, I think that like this, the situation that we have, people are always like, I want, you know, I'm shooting for heaven because everything's perfect there. I don't think that would be the best situation. I think the best situation is the one that we got right now.
That's very, very agnostic of you. I appreciate it.
Very meta.
No, I like that. It's like, you know, you're always waiting for something better, but why not just enjoy the moment? Maybe that's even a greater thing here. It's just, you might be, this might be the best times. Shout out Andy Bernard from The Office, where he was like, I wish So I wish people told you you were in the good times before you left them or something like that. You know, that's that might be your greater point here. This is why I like talking to you. You know, you're just innately a deep thinker. You're a positive guy, which goes back to our earlier point.
Yeah, and I need to teach myself this, Coach, because I worry way too much. I gotta know the good times when I'm in them.
Chronic worrier over here myself, so I'm right there with you. You know, let's shift gears too. We'll go completely negative here. But this is a fun one. This is pretty relatable with our GOAT rankings this week. We are going to rank. Oh, I'm so happy about this. We're going to rank the worst kind of people at parties. And so I'm assuming too, I'm making the assumption when I say parties, it's kind of it's thinking house parties, but really could be like any social gathering with amongst friends.
Mm-hmm. Pre-games, going out to the bars, you know, big social gatherings.
All right.
And I'm gonna give you the first pick.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
As long as you don't take this one that I'm thinking of, don't take
it. There's actually some really good ones here. I am going to take my 1-1. I'm going to take the bragger. And what I mean by the bragger is I'm going to take the person you talk to that kind of really just talks about themselves. Could be completely indifferent about your life story or what's going on with you. Just gasses themselves up, talks about how great they are. Maybe they're an analyst at Goldman, or they just, you know, they're telling you how awesome their life is and how, you know, their Hinge profile is really active. And it's just, you couldn't care less about the conversation. They're just going on and on about themselves. And you're actively looking for someone to walk by you so you can make eye contact and just get out of that situation. So that's
it always seems like with those people too, like you could tell them the world's biggest news. You could be like, hey, I just won the lottery for like $258 million. And they would be like, yeah, but I got pretzels yesterday at work. So it doesn't matter what the conversation is about, they're making it about themselves.
Yeah. They're like, oh, that's great. You just won $15 million. My dad has a house on Wisconsin in Nantucket. And you're just like, why can't you be happy for me? Why do you have to talk about yourself all the time? And yeah, people also that bring in the same vein, people that bring the story always back to them. If the whole group's talking about a story, they somehow manage to spin it around and make it about themselves. 1-1, that's my pick.
All right. My first one is, I know we both hate this, and this is why I'm taking it first. It's the non-includers at a party. So if you are at a function already and somebody new shows up and you know that they don't know a lot of people, the people who do not work to include them in the situation. Okay. There is no worse feeling than like somebody who you might not know very well invites you to a party. You don't have anything going on that night. So you decide to go and you don't know anybody there. One, it's scary. Two, when you get there, no worse feeling than nobody says hi to you. You're fighting an uphill battle. So the people who do not work to include new people in the party, the worst.
This is great. It's a breed of people where it's like, if you're going to hang out, if you're inviting somebody and you know it's going to be predominantly college friends, high school friends, work friends, and that the person you're inviting is going to be an outsider and they're going to come in and they're not necessarily in the group, you got to incorporate them, or else it's you just threw your buddy in a situation that is it's not inclusive, and they're just sitting on the outside the whole time and they probably leave within 30 minutes of hanging out.
Exactly. It's such a tough situation to be thrown into, but it makes it so much better when someone goes out of their way to come up and say hi to you.
100%. And usually more often than not, if you make the judgment call to bring somebody out, it's like they're going to be friends with the group instantly. They just got to be included. That you just got to make that first entry, maybe a dumb joke, gas your friend up a little bit. Everybody love everybody. ELE.
Exactly. Everybody love everybody.
All right. I think you're going to like this one. This is the, I call it the freeloader. And this is the person that shows up to any gathering with not ringing the door with their elbows. And what I mean by that is that they show up with nothing. They don't bring any food. They don't bring any alcohol. That's probably the bigger one, is the alcohol. And not only that, not only do they bring nothing, but they are going to for sure take everything that you and your friends bought. So all the hard-earned money you got through the week to buy your drinks or buy your food, they are going to munch on all of it, and they are going to mooch off you and not pay you a dime. So those are the freeloaders at the parties.
Yeah, that is my number two. Gosh, those people. And there is one situation where if you were invited to a function and the person specifically says, like, we're providing booze, or like, you know, $5 at the door, free booze, something like that, don't bring anything, right? That's fine. Like, they have made it abundantly clear that they are providing the alcohol. But somebody who shows up, especially, this gets me at a pregame, the pregame, it's like, what did you expect? Like, you expect that we all bring stuff and you didn't? Like, just always show up with at least a six pack, at least, you know, maybe a fifth or something. Just don't ever come empty handed to a function.
Yeah, the best would be also the people that come in and then they're like, oh, what, you only got Bud Lights? And it's like, you could have brought something.
Yeah, no, those are the same people. Those are the same people.
Those are one of the same.
Yeah. All right. My number two I'm going to take is the person who is never satisfied with where you currently are. So what I'm saying is, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're at the pregame and it's like 9:30. And you're having a great time. You don't care. You know, you don't need to go. And your buddy's like, dude, we got to get to the bar. The line's going to be long. You're like, come on, man. Like, we're having a great time here. Whatever. You're like, all right, you know, we'll call an Uber. We'll see you guys there. You get to the bar. You're there for an hour. He's like, dude, I heard this bar is popping. We got to go to this bar. That person is like, come on, man. Like, just let me have a good time where I'm at. I'm with people I like. Just let it be.
100%. I know exactly the type of person you're talking about. And it's just like, it's like right when you get like your, maybe your second drink where it's like, hey man, this place is beat. We got to go somewhere else. It's like, why? There's great music. We can just hang out here. Why do we have to constantly be on the move? And it's just the grass is always greener with those ones. And it's so annoying.
Yeah. It's those people are tough.
100%.
Right, give me your third.
Yep. Number three, we got, this might be a little early to take, but I'm going to say the shot enthusiast. I got names for all these. The shot enthusiast / the bottle enforcer, meaning the person that is constantly telling everyone to drink all the time, running around with like a rogue handle or just like calling for shots. Honestly, I'm going to tell you something right now. Nobody wants to take those shots. Nobody wants to drink from that disgusting bottle that's been passed around 9 to 12 times to other people. Just let everyone relax. We're all having a good time. We're all sipping our drinks independently. We don't need to start tossing shot backs at, you know, 6:30 at night, you know? The night, like, it's just the people that do it way too soon and they're always encouraging people to drink more. It's just like, let's all relax. You know, we're not 18.
Yeah, the shot enthusiast is tough to be around, especially I've been around a shot enthusiast who buys a round of shots that you did not ask for and you actually don't want, and then expects you to buy a round back. It's like, no, nobody, you stuck yourself in this hole. I'm not doing it back, bro.
That's a different list. Hey, let me get 18 green tea shots. Like, oh, you know what else you're doing? You're just paying your credit card bill tomorrow.
Yeah,
because I'm not.
Yeah, that gives me another. What I'm gonna take for my third, and I didn't even have it on my list, but you've inspired me. The let's split the bill person who spent so much more money than you actually did. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. If you are somebody who is spending head and heels above the amount that everybody else is spending, either offer your card or do not split it evenly. Because there is nothing worse than getting stuck with $45, $50 more than you actually paid for your drinks.
100%. It's like 4 espresso martinis, 2 charcuterie boards, you know, 15 filet mignons. And you guys got 1 Caesar to split and then 2 Miller Lights. Yeah, we'll just do it. We'll do it halfsies.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Yeah, disgusting. That's a great pick because I can't stand those people. It's just like, pay your own way. Your own way.
You just got 6 free drinks off of me.
I know. This one might be a little bit more for pregames and whatnot, but I would actually say, and you might disagree with me, I would say the overly competitive gamer in terms of the person that's playing like Pong games or playing sort of any drinking game, and it's just like way too intense about it. And it's just, hey, again, kind of the same deal as a shot enthusiast. We're all having a good time. We all work during the week. We're all just relaxing. Why are you going so hard on Stack Cup? You know.
Yes, I tell you what, I'm a very competitive person. I don't love to lose, but the whole entire point behind drinking games is to have fun. You're at a party, right? Like, so if I lose a game of Pong, whatever, doesn't matter, right? But I got a story for you, actually, because I had that on my list, because this last weekend I was playing what's the one where you bounce it in? Stack.
Yep.
I was playing Stack Cup, and two people were on my side, on either side of me. There was a discrepancy in the rules of if you, this one person believed that if you bounced it in on the first try, you could stack anybody, like you could stack the person who had it. The traditional rules, I believe, are if you get it in on the first try, you can place it anywhere you want. But, you know, people play different ways, right? So this person, trying very hard not to say any defining characteristics. This person bounced it in on the first try and stacked the person next to me. So like on either side of me, and they got into a full out screaming match in a game of Stack Cup over like, you know, whatever, how much they poured in the cup, and like literally screaming expletives at each other. And I was like, this is so far from fun that I do not want to be in the middle of this right now.
That's the thing. It's like, it's so far removed from anything you'd actually want to do. It's like, why? Yeah. Like, who, just drink it. Who cares? Why are you screaming? And yeah, it's like in the same vein too, with like the pawn games too, where it's like, how much water, how much is in that cup? And it's like, let's all take a minute here.
The guy who calls elbows on you like three times is like a subset of that. Like, come on, dude, who cares?
God, I you should have just smacked the, just started just playing Slap Cup during Stack and just like started going rogue.
That would have been perfect. All right, beautiful. My number four is the person who is stumbling in to whatever function you're at from wherever they were at before. So the person who drank way too much of the pregame that you know you're going to have to take care of that night. Listen, it's just not a good idea. I think everybody's been there, right? Everybody has been there. But it's just like everybody's looking at you like, oh no, this guy is way far gone before everybody is. He's going to be outside throwing up in the garbage can in about 30 minutes. Tough, tough person to be at a party.
Yeah, 100%. That's a, it's always like, it's almost like a sigh of just like annoyance when they're walking, like, oh, and then they come up to you. You can't understand what they're saying. Their breath just reeks of stale cigarettes. And it's just like, yeah, that's, I know the exact same thing. It's just like, at that point, you might as well have just Ubered home. There's no point of you being here.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We all know the time that that's happened. So
that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that. I got my last two ones, kind of going back and forth between them. I don't want to bash anybody, but the really close talking, I'll say male or female, but the close talking, really drunk person that's just like right up in your face, and you don't really know them that well. So it's not like a cool thing. Like, it's not one of your close friends, and they're just like, and they're honestly, you can't understand a word they're saying because of how gone they are. So really like close talking, super drunk person, in any social setting, especially if you're at a place with like really a lot of music, you're trying to like lean in, hear what they're saying. Yeah. That's my last one.
That is a tough one. And, you know, it does happen a lot in the loud bars. So that's, I understand that more, but like, there's nothing worse when there's like some quiet music on and somebody's like, so where are you from? And you're like, oh my God, where did you come from? They always pop out of nowhere too, right? Like, you're always coming from back here up into your face. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a gremlin. All of a sudden you're like, whoa, Jesus. Like, where? They just appear out of nowhere. And then, yeah, it's just, it's kind of a buzzkill, kind of a mood ruiner.
I would agree. All right. My last one is the, I'll say the creepy dudes. I really don't like being at a function where there is a guy who's making a lot of girls very uncomfortable, because you have to step in, because like, it's just so weird. Like, the whole night becomes weird because this person is like going way far off of the boundaries. And it's, again, it's a lot of time somebody you don't know very well. And you're like, hey man, you got to knock it off because you're making people very uncomfortable. So the creepy dudes is somebody who I don't like being at a party with.
Yeah. The creepy dudes where someone's like, oh, I invited Jeff. He's cool. He'll just hang out with us. And then it's just an instant ruiner the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, this guy has not left me alone the whole time. I don't want people thinking that we're like good friends. We gotta separate some distance.
They're a little bit. People you do not want to associate yourself with, and they always are just kind of there, and they're just, it's just not good.
100%. I think I honestly only missed one from the list that I could have included, which would be I would say the guy that wants to, there's nothing wrong with, or the guy or girl, but the person that, I think it happens more with males, is they want to flirt with, or they want to, you know, flirt with the opposite sex, but they do it, they talk about it so much. It's just like, I don't know, this is very specific, but I feel like the person that like is like, man, we should go talk to those girls over there, but they kind of looks at you to initiate it. That sounds like but you know what I mean? It's like, it's constantly like, hey, it's 5 o'clock. Can we just like give it a minute before we start going talking to random girls here?
Every time they walk in, they've already spotted the tables that are just girls that they want you to go initiate talking to. Yeah, I know. I got it. Yeah. You're like, dude, I have a girlfriend. We can be friends with them. That's fine. They seem like cool people, but I'm not going up to there.
Yeah.
That sounds like a you issue.
I can ask how their day is, but I mean, that's about the extent of it.
Exactly. Yep.
Yep.
All right. We actually exhausted my list. So
I think we got them. I think we covered them all.
We covered all the bases. All right, everybody. This does it for this episode of Out of Our League. Follow us on all of our social medias. And as always, Benny, it's a pleasure.
Good seeing you, brother.